You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I'll let Bobby Warsaw tell me how I did it.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I liked it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Broken Adrian Heath, David Goss, Kalen Carr, Matt Doyle, still shuffling around somewhere on a pair of broken feet, but he'll be back.
Rumors. Rumors around town, by the way. I think it's an Athletic report, but unsure. The Athletic.
Depends on who published it at the Athletic.
That Doyle can actually walk. Yeah.
He might have milked this.
To break both feet at once? That's the only people I've heard of doing that is Looney Tunes characters.
Yeah. that's like Roger Rabbit. They immediately healed.
That is hard
to
do.
It's bizarre. Yeah. I don't know, man. He says he can't be here, so we're going to do it without him. We have a great show for you. Julian Gressel of DC United. I almost said Atlanta United. Of DC United will join us here in a little bit. And we have a couple interviews from L.A. with, Peter Vermees talking 2019 struggles, Ike Opara, all the changes, why they're spending now, Sporting Kansas City. Bruce Arena on man-to-management. I had to ask him, Diablo, Marco Echeverri. I've heard so many stories about him and how he approached some of his DC United days, especially after wins in his DC United days. So we'll talk about him, LD, Beckham, Keane, and then we have Brian Schmetzer to address the Bobby Warshaw brouhaha, and also what it's like to be a lifer in Seattle, both indoor, outdoor, and just a legend.
So strategically this year, after last year and our relationship with coaches, let's say it was a bit rocky.
Yeah.
You've gone out to Los Angeles. Would you say pandering or sort of softening the blow, peace offering?
It was a little bit like Doyle with his Twitter fans, so probably pandering.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
we got
a handshake with Adrian Heath, just trying to mend the fences.
This is what Andrew Wiebe thinks of you, Adrian Heath.
And that's not true. I didn't do that.
Broken
you did not. You broke the gnome. You broke the gnome. And look, we did the biggest news on the last show. The biggest news is El Seno is back.
Boom.
The Union making their annual one-year contract signing.
Beautiful.
And also the games have started in preseason. So, Kalen, were you on Pinarol's Instagram watching the grainy stream that was LAFC's 2-0 win?
Subreddit, all of that.
Just everywhere.
No, I've been
just
watching. But if I'm going deep, I have been going deep on the Philadelphia Union U-12s because these kids have been watching El Seno. I don't know if he's been training them in the off season or doing sort of internships because these kids, it's sick. You should watch.
Yeah,
them.
I saw a couple. Yeah, it's sweet. It's sweet. All right, look, let's talk about Major League Soccer in a real way. And we will start with this, which is be patient, because Kalen, I'm going to out you a little bit. You came in and said, you know, it feels like the offseason's been a little slow.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And I didn't know what he was talking about either, because there have been a ton
room to walk into with that this morning. You walk and be like, outside of Chicharito.
You're watching.
Everybody's like, are you kidding me?
Have you looked at the transactions page recently? And by the way, I just want to preach a little bit of patience. Pity Martinez was signed last year on the 24th of February. That'd have been 3 days ago. And then you have Ike Opara traded a couple days later. Wouldn't have happened by now. Carlos Gil would not have been signed by the Revs. And Bumwang would not have been signed by Vancouver. Those happened on the 30th of January. Alexander Matricha and Sam Johnson a little out of place here. Sorry, Sam. The 2nd of February.
Yeah, but Andrew, it's a leap year this year, so it throws all your timing off.
Gotcha. We forgot to talk to Taylor Twellman about that. That was a real mistake. Nani didn't come till mid-February. CJ Sapong was traded to the Fire in late February. Alexander Pozuelo went to Toronto in March. Ebert went to NYCFC in March. So be patient, everybody. Signings are coming.
You're saying this to me.
Signings already happened.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know. So let's
Five teams have broken signing records already this offseason.
Wow.
Boom.
That's like an Atlanta United attendance record. It's like
nice.
They just keep.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter because it's made to be broken.
Wow.
Okay, gotcha. How about this question for you then? Who's had the best offseason so far? And you can define best however you want it, just as I have defined biggest however I wanted it. Yeah. And in the mailbag, people ripped on my signings piece as well. So, Dave, start us off. Best offseason so far.
I don't think this was easy, which is a positive for a lot of teams. I think I went with Columbus Crew. They brought in Darlington Nagbe in a trade. They, of course, set a transfer fee record.
Ding, 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 ding.
Lucas Zelarayán in his prime.
Headline.
Argentine number 10 coming from Mexico. They picked up Fernando Adi, it seems like, for nothing. Not saying that's part of this. They had already done work with Luis Diaz. They've got both their fullbacks coming back. They are stacked at center back. They're like six deep. So, hey, MLS teams, if you need a center back, you should try and trade with
Can
Columbus.
Can we talk about the name of the center back they signed from the Dutch League? Vito Wormgoor.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. And by the way, that's just how I look at this league, you know?
No, it's
just,
good.
It's a great name. It's a beautiful name. Aiden Morris, by the way, they signed as a homegrown at Indiana, and supposedly he's been dominating, I think, U-20 camp for the U.S. He's supposed to be a stud.
And they signed another homegrown whose name is Sebastian Berhalter.
Ah.
Greg Berhalter's son.
Whose son is he?
Yeah.
Rookie symposium.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Look, I love you. Yeah, you know I love
the
crew this offseason. I'm all in on the crew. They're an ESPN Plus team for me. I think they're going to play. I mean, they're going to take a step forward. It seemed like the first 6 months under Caleb, they didn't really know what to do.
No.
And then the second 4 months or whatever it was, you get Luis Diaz, you get Pedro Santos on a, you know, just a burner as far as form goes.
Yeah.
And
no, but they were smart in that they made the Diaz signing early. They brought in some other pieces early to kind of have the framework to go into this offseason. They've got a legit center forward. You know that. Diaz is a game changer in this league. Now he's got the support. They probably legitimately go 4 or 5 deep in central midfield, which is rare for an MLS team. They've got depth on the back line. They had a DP that literally didn't play a game last year at left back. So they're all bringing all of that back. They brought in Eloy Room in the middle of the year. So starting 11, I think they're competitive with anyone. And I think Porter and Bezbachenko were smart in that. Why rush things when you come in? You have a new ownership group. You have a new structure. You're trying to build out a club. Don't make an early signing that puts you in a hole that you have to work out of. They didn't do that. And now I think they're ready to fly.
You any coffee in that cup?
No.
Nothing is in there?
No, it's water.
Oh, okay. I was going to pour one out for Dwight Burgess.
Yeah,
legend. Yeah, the voice of the crew will not be back for the 25th season. So
but
shout out to him.
Congratulations to him for all he's done. Yep. I mean, we've all been around this league for a really long time, and we all know some of the people that have helped build this and stick around and care about the game. Dwight Burgess, one of them, and whether if it's a health reason, our thoughts go out to him. If not, we hope that he comes into the stands and just enjoys the game.
Congratulations on 24 years. Kalen, best offseason so far?
To me, there's only been one, really, and it's the LA Galaxy.
Yes.
And for every team in MLS.
Correct.
Basically, it's just been tweeting. Every social media account is tweeting fan appreciation night, but it just happens to be when Chicharito's coming to town and trying to sell those tickets. So
decent timing, huh?
Not only is this the best for LA Galaxy, every other team should probably be thinking.
That's why you keep your fan appreciation night. You don't set a date.
Yeah.
You wait. And then it's like, oh, April, turns out. Zlatan signed. Here it is. That's our fan appreciation night. Yeah, look.
We.
I think the Galaxy.
Interesting that the guy who came in and said the offseason's been slow except for Chicharito picked LA Galaxy.
Well, also, I got to go to Spain. So.
Yeah. Hey, Sevilla's nice this time.
Yeah.
I did stay an extra night and go to a flamenco show.
Mm.
Nice.
Very nice.
It's a stressful grind.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw Rosalía on the Grammys last night, but yeah, this was. It was part of, you know, the experience.
I've seen you on the gram. Yeah. Very relaxed, maybe doing some yoga. We won't go into that
now. He said the Grammy.
Oh, I
Grammys.
See. The gram.
Yeah.
Rosalía, up-and-coming Latina pop star.
Yeah, okay. My bad. I'll check her out.
I'll check her out. That's your category. Right
okay.
There.
I just heard the gram, and my mind went
it
to
lives there.
But back to the signing, I mean... I really believe that they have had the best offseason because it's not just that. You get Christian Pavone, who's been there.
Yeah, lock it in.
Yeah.
They didn't know that it was for sure. I mean, we kind of knew.
Yeah.
It was gonna, but you still have to do the due diligence.
But also, Katai, as far as upside goes, I don't know if there was anybody that, in a change of scenery, might actually be a better player than we've seen of Katai, especially consistency-wise, and you add those pieces around him. I also like some of the other moves they've made. Sasha Kljestan, we've seen the Orlando City bounce, shall we call it, where a player you think doesn't have a lot of quality or value left and goes to another situation and finds himself still a very valuable player.
Do we call it the Orlando City bounce? Is it the purple bounce? Is it the lion bounce? What is it?
Whatever it was, that was one of my favorite moments in ETR in a really long time.
Yeah, that was a good moment.
But Kalen just come out.
It's the Orlando City bounce. I mean, it's everybody knows it. It's fair.
No, but I could see him having the type of impact that we've seen older central midfielders, Benny Field. Haber or Lee Nguyen going to LAFC, that type of signing, I think he has a lot to offer them.
Wasn't Danny Acosta at Orlando City for a hot second, too?
He was on loan there last year, apparently.
Oh, there we go. Maybe that's another Orlando City bounce.
Yeah, I mean,
now they're like eight deep at
left back. And Sua's the other left back there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, by the way,
I just think, obviously, Chicharito, I don't think we've had a chance to really see what Barrichello wants to do with this team yet. And I think a big part of that, obviously, was the big number nine they had last year, which changes the way you play. And if you look at Scalotto and the way he's managed before, the type of number nine that he's used before has been a hardworking, industrious grinder that can get in the box, score goals, pressure defensively. These are the qualities that Chicharito is going to bring. And then you add those pieces outside of him that are going to be able to unlock defenses. He's not going to need to drift into the wings or make runs in behind to the corners, because that's going to be where they find joy on the width. Just get in the box, finish in the box. I think we're going to see what Scalotto wants from this team in a way that we haven't seen yet from this Galaxy.
Light
my votive candles at my LA Galaxy shrine.
Baby.
LD,
yeah.
Bring out the best in this
guy.
Man. Pavone, I think we're going to see the best of him. Katai, I was reading, not in Polish, via Google Translate, Szymysław Frymkowski had an interview, and they were saying, who was the guy that impressed you the most in that Fire team last year before he comes for preseason? And he was like, they have Basti, and Nemanja Nikolic is a great player, Nico Gaetan, everybody knows him, but he's like, Alexander Katai, his form was too up and down, mm-hmm. but when he was on, this is a translation, he didn't say he roasted people, but he basically said he roasted people.
Yeah, so. And this now, the thing was, he probably wasn't good enough to have the team built around him. He's like the fifth best player in this attack, so it's going to be perfect space for him to just, as you say, roast people.
Yes. Can I just throw out some honorable mentions before I go on record with mine? Colorado Rapids.
Yeah.
Good offseason so far. You're building on something that was very, very good over the last 4 or 5 months of last season. DC United. We're going to talk to Julian Gressel. Of course, Ola Kamara came in late last year, but Yamil Asag, its son, Edison Flores, they should probably be in this top three. Dallas, you went in on the Franco Jara. I'm with you on that one. And Sporting KC, underrated offseason as well. We're going to hear from Peter Vermees in a second. But let me shout out the Portland Timbers, because they were in a weird spot heading into this offseason. A lot of it was hinging on Diego Valeri. Could they get that job done? Could they figure out how to keep both sides happy? Could they figure out how to not give him a DP deal? Because if they did, their hands would be tied in some ways. Well, they did it. They got him on TAM. That was step one. They need another center back. They go on TAM. They get Dario Zuparic. We'll see. He could be great. He could not be great. Julio Cascante has been okay, but you have Larry Smabiala. That looks like a good pairing and some depth with Bill Tuiloma as well. Yimi Chara, don't know. Could be, could not be, but you got your DP and you went out and you spent money to do it. Timbers have never been afraid to do that. And then Pumas said goodbye. Nothing official yet on MLS's side, but Felipe Mora, who is he's a stud. He's like, I mean, what was your reference? Franco Jara, four years younger?
Yeah, legit fox in the box guy, can score goals. As you mentioned, I think with Chicharito, they're dirty, they're scrappy, but it's consistent. He's always around the 18. One of the question marks around the Yimi Chara signing was he doesn't score a lot of goals. Yeah, but he creates a lot of opportunities. This is the type of guy who's going to be on the end of that and just finishing for fun.
In 2.5 seasons with Pumas, 30-something goals.
Cruz Azul as well before that. Ude Chile before that.
He was the leading
team.
He scored a bunch. I don't know if he's the leading scorer in Chile in that year.
He scored 18 1 year, 14 another
year.
Here's
the best part. He's a TAM player, according to Sam Stajkal. Mm-hmm. That's a rumor, not necessarily a report.
If Paul steps up and says something, it's a report.
Correct. But that's a great signing on TAM to get that quality of a player. And then there's the DP Polish guy, Jaroslaw Nagozda, who's still not in. I hope that's
working on that for a while.
I haven't worked on that at all, but Google Translate, I'm hoping, did me right on that.
And they didn't lose Valeri.
Yeah. So now, I mean, what do they play? Could they play a 4-4-2? And then you have Yimi Chara and you have Sebastian Blanco on the left, and you have a two-striker setup, and maybe a Bobasi floats in there, and he's probably going to be gone for the Olympics. I mean, I just look at their roster, and if they get Christian Paredes back, I mean, they're deep everywhere but right back, and they have Jorge Moreira, who was good last year. So props to the Portland Timbers. I think you've had a very good offseason. TBD, what happens with that, you know, the CBA, because maybe some of these signings look like a little bit different at that time. Maybe you can buy them down with TAM. I don't know what's going to happen there.
Can I throw a little salt on your plate, or should we not do that now?
No. Oh, sure. Actually, you got salt?
Well, I would just say,
is that something that happens?
I don't know. What do you
salt on parades?
I don't know.
It doesn't even make sense.
How do I? Rain. Can I put a little rain on your parade?
Exactly.
I would just say, I agree with everything you've said. I think the Timbers have had a good offseason. I think they've improved their teams. There were things going on off the field with Brian Fernandez that affected his ability to perform for them. But as a player, he does more than what Mora does. They've lost that. And maybe pure just like connection and being locked in is better. They struggled to score goals at home last year. I don't think they've fixed that with the way the players they've brought in, if they're going to go with the same like-for-like system. Now, if they think going to a two-forward system and maybe playing a little more direct, allowing those guys to isolate with center backs, play off each other, all these other ideas can work for them, fine. But if it's take the talent you have and then plug it into the system you played last year with Valeri a year older, with Mora less of a guy who can come outside and create. I don't know that they've improved, but I would argue last year I thought they were a team that could have gone to MLS Cup if Fernandez had stayed locked in, so maybe it doesn't matter.
All right, look, a little bit of old, a little bit of new for the Portland Timbers, a whole lot of new for DC United. No Lucharu, moved on. Now they have, in large part, a new team, and Julian Gressel is part of that. Let's welcome him to Extra Time right now. Julian Gressel, Atlanta United stalwart, and now a DC United player, which sounds kind of weird to me, Julian. Does it sound weird to you, or has it hit you yet?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it that much. I mean, it's something new, that's for sure. I'm excited about it. And, you know, I'm just open-minded. And that's kind of the mindset I have going in. So, yeah, it's just something new.
We're used to you in Atlanta United colors. We'll get used to you with DC United. But this move and the preamble to the move was very public. Everybody kind of got to follow along. Explain to me maybe why you took that route with these negotiations, I guess I'll call them, and how it all happened from your point of view. Maybe even start us back at like exit interview 2019.
I mean, I actually don't think it was too public, to be honest with you. Just, you know, everybody kind of always expected me to sign a new contract, you know, so it was always looming around, you know, and that's why, you know, yeah, maybe I've spoken a little bit too much about it after the season, but that's just, you know, how I felt. And I feel like I'm always a pretty honest guy, you know, and so that was, you know, just how I felt in that moment. And you know, I didn't want to not say something or lie in that sense. But, you know, I think it was still a lot was not revealed to the public, you know, and there were still good conversations behind closed doors that, you know, will probably stay behind closed doors forever, which is a good thing. You know, and yeah, it was just a difficult process for me overall, you know, to go through all that, you know, kind of towards the end of the season when I was ready to sign a new contract. You know, we were ready to sign a new, basically after we won MLS Cup, you know, but I never really got to a point where I felt comfortable with it. So it kind of just dragged on and dragged into this off season. And then once it kind of became clear a bit more of what it's going to look like, then, you know, it was a bit of a shock, you know, where I always thought I was going to stay in Atlanta. That was always the consensus, but it ended up not happening that way, and you know, that's okay. Like I said, I'm excited that this the whole process is done now, and I can just go back to, you know, just playing.
Andrew mentioned some of this happened, you know, out in the open, so we all had an idea that something was going on, but I think the actual trade, the moment it actually happened, shocked a lot of people because it felt like it came out of nowhere. When did you realize that you weren't going to be back in Atlanta? Maybe it was around the trade, maybe it was the end of last year. And what was kind of the process like, you know, taking that those emotions in and understanding that?
I think for me, the first time I really, really thought that I wasn't going to be in Atlanta was right when I reported for preseason. You know, we had some good conversations right before, with me actually involved as well in the conversations before. It was always more front office than my agent. You know, and then, you know, once I kind of reported and I, you know, we started training, I really wanted something to happen, you know, and it had never really trended in the direction of a new contract, to be honest. You know, and that's okay. You know, the club has to make decisions. If they're tough, if they're easy, you know, whatever. But I understand that. And that's, you know, when I wanted something to happen for me. And that's kind of when I first, you know, wrapped my head around a trade.
One of the things we'd heard was potentially you talking to teams outside of Major League Soccer. Obviously, MLS a little tough to work between teams as a player. Was that ever a serious option on the table for you to leave MLS?
I think they weren't too serious. There was always some interest, you know, from what I've heard. But in the wintertime, it's always difficult, you know, to go, especially in my case, probably to Europe, you know, or to Germany or wherever. Just because teams, you know, they rather have or get players in that window to really strengthen the squad and really have a sure thing. And for them, that was a bit of a too risky move, I guess, in that way. But we had a couple teams that, you know, were ready to make offers where, you know, if it really got to a point where I really wanted to pursue that, I think we could have done that. But for me, you know, I think after last season, I've kind of thought about it long and hard with my family, you know, and for me, I think that the big thing was to stay in MLS. You know, I didn't want to force anything outside of MLS, and I knew that there was teams within MLS very interested in me. And I knew that, you know, the league wanted to keep me as well. So it was always the first option was for me to stay. And I'm excited now, like I said, for a new opportunity and a new team here in the U.S.
Julian, a lot of the conversation around your value seemed to be centered around your relationship with Joseph Martinez. And was he a byproduct in some ways of your service, or was your service valuable because you had an incredible finisher in the box? You played so many positions for Atlanta United. Where do you think you'll fit best for DC? And are you looking at this as an opportunity in some ways to show that, hey, there's a little bit more to your game, that maybe you get a chance to grow in a different way in a new situation?
Yeah, for sure. I'm coming in here not as a draft pick anymore. It's a bit of a different situation, you know, where DC, you know, obviously got me within a trade, and then I wasn't quite cheap in that way either. We can be honest about that. I'm excited for this new challenge and new opportunity for me, you know, but I think the big thing for me personally is that I've never seen myself as a draft pick. You know, I've always wanted to be a guy that was up there with all the stars that Atlanta bought, you know, if that was Joseph, that was Pity, if that was Barco, you know, I've never seen myself as lesser than those guys. And I think I've shown that on the field. And in terms of how I fit with DC, I think, you know, we're very early in preseason. You know, I'm excited for the new challenge. I'm excited for a new coach and get some more input, you know, from his end and kind of see how he thinks I can develop my game a bit more. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to fit into the squad and kind of figure out a role. Where that will be on the field is TBD. We'll figure that out as we go along in preseason, and hopefully we can put a good, you know, good team out there that can compete every weekend.
Julian, you're killing. Matt Doyle and Ben Bear working on their depth charts right now. You got to give them a little something here. Are you a right back, a right mid, a center mid?
I don't think I'm a right back. I think that's the consensus in general. Every coach I've spoken to doesn't really see me as a right back. If there's need be, obviously I play that. But I don't think for an extended amount of time I'll play that too often. It'll probably be one of the other five spots that I've played.
So let me ask you this straight up. We watch you play week in and week out. We watch the whole league. We just mainline this stuff. Are you the best crosser of the ball in Major League Soccer?
Well, I don't know. I guess, you know, you gotta look at percentages, and then, you know, I guess you can look at stats in a way. But I feel like if I can pick my head up and pick a ball out, and then, you know, I'm feeling good in that moment, then I can deliver a pretty good cross, yeah. So I don't know if I'm the best one or not, but I think that's definitely one of a strength of mine, where I can really isolate if it's Ola now or a second runner. We'll see. But definitely a strength of mine, I think.
How long does it take to build that chemistry? We talk about you and Joseph, and obviously he feasted on what you brought him. Now you have Ola Kamara, you have these other pieces, Edison Flores, Yamil Assad, yada, yada, yada. How long does it take to build that chemistry? How do you do it?
You just practice, you just play, you know, with each other. You talk about things, and you know, sometimes it goes quicker, sometimes it takes a little bit longer. Like, for me and Joseph, you know, it took actually a bit, you know, it wasn't always right there, you know, and it wasn't easy either. You know, I think I was in a spot where in the second season, especially obviously with when we won MLS Cup, I think the second half of the season is when we really started clicking, you know, and the first half, I remember that I was getting frustrated a lot, you know, of kind of just like missing here a yard, there a yard, you know, he makes the first post run, I play the ball to the second post, so cut it back. You know, little things like that where I actually get pretty frustrated about it. So, obviously it's a work in progress. You know, it's both sides, you know, where me and Ola have talked quite a bit actually now already. We were just getting into more tactical shape and more playing out the back, and then, you know, kind of going how we want to approach the final third. So, it's a natural process where we just go through moments in practices and in friendly games and in real games to talk about. And we just kind of learn from those and hopefully get on the same page really, really quick.
happiest man in MLS. Got to be Ola Kamara. Has to be Ola. He's got to be jacked about this. Look, you're going to be playing with Paul Areola, and we've heard a lot about U.S. national team ambitions. For those of you out there who are listening that don't know, Julian, can you just kind of walk us through maybe a timeline and your perspective on perhaps one day playing for the U.S.?
Yeah, I think the timeline is still a bit out, so nothing that can come in the near future. I think I'm eligible for, getting naturalized or citizenship in 2 years, April in 2 years, I think. So, still a bit out, obviously I've always said that at this point, if I'm still at a high level and then, I can't get the citizenship, at that time, then I would love to. I would also love to be a part of the national team, and then represent the U.S. I'm very, very excited for that opportunity if it were to come, but for now, I think it's so far ahead in the future that I just want to keep playing at a high level, and put myself in a position, a good position with DC United, this season, next season, and then we'll kind of see where it goes for the national team. If there's a future or not, we'll kind of worry about that when the time's right.
All right, man. Makes sense. One more. We've talked about you as the player over and over in here, and that's what people see week to week on the field. I want to talk to you about you, the human. Your life as a pro in a lot of ways, your married life, your place in the community, like Atlanta was so many things to you, I have to imagine. As a human now, just as a person, what are you going through? What is your family going through? What are you thinking about outside just the nuts and bolts of where will Ben play me? What will it be like with DC United? How are you feeling right now?
I'm excited. Obviously, I look at Atlanta and it was home for us. We were very happy there. We've made a great impact in the community. I was very well liked around the city, which is obviously very nice. And to leave something good is always difficult, but at the same time, I'm excited for a new challenge. I think I'm a guy that likes to have new challenges and new opportunities and new adventures. And to be able to step out of our comfort zone again now, and while we're still very pretty young, we haven't started a family yet, just a dog. Me and my wife are excited about this new step in that way. Growing as a couple, as a family, and growing individually as people. And then if you speak about guys, now with Kobe, obviously very, very tragic there. But if you look at him, for example, kind of the impact he makes on people on a daily, that's something, I definitely see him as a role model and strive to do as well. Obviously, I can't do it in that big of fashion, but, things like that come to mind where, it's a new opportunity, it's a new adventure, and I'm excited to grow. I'm excited to learn more and make an impact, in a different city, hopefully in a positive way.
All right, man. We're excited to see you in D.C. Got to find that dog park, yeah?
Definitely, and we will, I'm sure.
All right. Thank you, Julian. Good luck this season, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Big thanks to Julian for joining us, and big thanks to him and to you too, Dave, for asking the tough question. He's not a right back, he says.
I gotta know.
He says he's not a right back.
Yeah.
And we sat on this show, and we said, he probably is going to play right back.
It's interesting. What's interesting about the attack for them is you have guys who can all play a couple of positions. What's Paul Areola's best spot? What's his best spot with this team? Edison Flores the same, a guy who's played out on the left, who's played as a 10. Emil Assad, a guy who maybe with this trade for Gressel isn't one of the starting players in this team where we thought 2 weeks ago he was a locked-in starter. So you got Ola Kamara in the middle, who's a pure goal scorer. The question is, how do you create around him? How do you do enough work? All of these guys are capable of that, so it'll be interesting to see how Ben Olsen handles getting them all in.
You don't put that type of money down for a right back.
That's fair.
You don't put that.
But you have a DP at right mid.
Right. You have Paul Areola. And then Yamil Assad is a TAM player, and he scored a ton of goals for them when he was there. And then in central midfield, Felipe.
Center midfielder, Paul Areola?
Russell Knauss.
I don't know.
Junior Moreno.
They traded for Felipe last year.
Yeah, they have Felipe.
Eddie Segura plays for LAFC. Uli Segura.
Uli,
I don't know if he's even.
Eddie's good too.
Coming back for you.
I think he'll play a more advanced role.
Do you think he starts at right midfield?
Again, I'm with you, Kalen. You can't pay a mil for somebody you don't start, right?
Well, definitely.
How could you just sit him on the bench?
But I disagree on the right back statement. Just because the league spending has changed, and if that's what elevates you, if you play through one wing and he overloads and creates chances and it fits with what Paul Areola does, who cares, right?
I would put Paul Ariola at right back quicker than I would put Gressel at right.
Really?
Back. Yeah. I think the quality that you get from Gressel going forward is going to unlock. I understand the speed element is a part of it, but as a right back, you can overlap and you can get up and especially if you tuck in Gressel into the middle a little bit at times, or you give him a little bit more free.
Am I going galaxy brain, just kind of imagining what you're talking about and thinking that maybe that makes Paul Ariola a more effective attacking player? Because he's
maybe,
not the focal point, and everybody's going to flood to Gressel to stop the service, and then he's on the overlap.
But now you've got a DP right back, which is fairly rare in Major League Soccer.
I don't know. You got a
tam.
It's either a DP. It's either a DP or it's a tam right back, right?
Yeah.
It's one or the other. All right. Before we get to Peter Vermees,
but complementary skill sets.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm fascinated to see how Ben Olsen does this, and I appreciate that Julian Gressel was like, "I've been here for like 3 days, guys. Like, let's just pump the brakes on exactly where I'm going to play." Aaron Long, the transfer saga is back. This time, Sky Sports is reporting that West Ham made an offer for loan, and the Red Bulls said no. It was $500,000. For the remainder of the season, so that's 6 months, $500,000. That's a decent little fee there. And then a $4.5 million option to buy in the summer. Reportedly, Red Bulls said no. Is that the right move by the Red Bulls? I mean, what's going on here? I probably wouldn't do it if I was them. Not with the offseason slowly going along and how important Aaron Long is for their team. And
they've lost lost Bradley Wright Phillips, and I don't know that they've totally replaced it. So I would say the core of this team is their defensive stability, and Aaron Long is the biggest part of that. He makes Tim Parker a better player. I think he makes Kamar Lawrence a better player. You're changing goalkeeper for the first time in 7 years. So I think for everything they're building, he's a crucial part of it. Now, if they're on the verge of making a few signings and a little bit of injection of money gets them over the line, then maybe now would make sense to do it. But from everything we've seen with Red Bulls, it's not like he's 21. Like, he's kind of in his prime now. So this is your last chance to sell, but it makes sense to me that they would keep him and continue to be competitive throughout 2020.
And the flip side, Kaelin, is a player's perspective, which is this is probably my last chance to move. I want to move. It seems like he wants to move. And so then how do you manage that relationship over the course of the year if he's like, why did you say no again?
I think it's a struggle, right? It's something that Chris Armas is going to have to manage in the locker room and has had to manage. This isn't a new thing. This has been a topic that's come up. It's come up again. They've had to continue to basically quiet it out.
Yeah.
And but they've also committed to a philosophy as a club, and I think that in a lot of different ways. And I think that's a part of it where they've invested a lot into him, and they see real value in him too. So if they can go to him and sell him on that, that's important. In that, it's still hard because, yeah, it's hard not to look over your shoulder, especially if you do feel like that window is closing. But it's a classic case of the value maybe that somebody else sees in him is lower than necessarily what he means to this club right now, which is a good story to tell the player. But at some point, yeah, if he's continuing to struggle with this, it might be something where they may have to move on.
The sell would be, one, a raise, and two, you're on the verge of cementing yourself as a starting national team player. Why put yourself in a situation where you may not be a starter? Be the 2020 MLS Defender of the Year like you were 2 years ago, and make sure right at the beginning of Greg Berhalter's cycle, you are one of the first names on the show.
And the flip side of that is, if you're Aaron Long, you're probably thinking, I'm good enough to go play. Let me go see. Like, and if I'm playing for West Ham, I'll be in that 11 no matter what.
But you don't need
but
to
Chicharito
be,
didn't play for West.
You don't need to be playing in the Premiership to be playing with the national team right now. It's not at that same point right now where you have to be playing abroad, or you have a coach that looks at it in that way, or the staff there is looking at only players in Europe. Like, that's totally changed now, and it's a brand new thing. So the opportunity, really, I agree, the opportunity is in front of him, but he needs to refine his form in MLS. And a part of that is letting go bit of that conversation, that talk. But that's also just the reality of MLS now. You're going to have interest, you're going to have offers, and it's something that clubs have to manage increasingly.
And Kamar Lawrence came out earlier and said, I don't know if I want to be here. Aaron Long's thinking, I could stay here, but maybe hit us with a couple signings, like some big-time players to take us back to where we were as a Supporters Shield winning Red Bulls. We'll see. Look, a good offseason on the other side for Sporting Kansas City. I chatted with Peter Vermees in L.A. for about 10 minutes on a tough 2019, how he's building this roster, a.k.a. why they're spending money now, and what he thinks about that Aiko Parra trade about a year in the future. We'll take a listen to that right now. Be right back. All right, 10 minutes with Peter Vermees of Sporting Kansas City. Peter, let's talk about the changing MLS. I feel like we do this almost every time at these sort of preseason events with you. A big fee for Alan Pulido, more for Alan than the fees combined in the history of the club. And it feels like every time I see a signing, it's a club record signing. What's happening in Major League Soccer right now?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I think that first and foremost, the play on the league is increasing, but then you also have to remember that we're getting more and more teams in the league too. So the competition isn't just getting to a few teams, it's going across the board. So if you're going to stay competitive, you're going to have to at some point get into that marketplace. That's one. I think the other thing is that, I've said this many times, TAM gets a lot of credit, but I don't think MLS gets a lot of credit for implementing that concept, right? But the reason why TAM, I think, has been so successful is this one major point that, again, I don't think gets discussed all the time. Prior to TAM, everybody just had DPs. If you recall, there was a lot of evaluation that just because you have three good DPs doesn't mean you're going to win MLS Cup. But recently, you see that the teams that have had that have three very good DPs are now starting to win MLS Cup pretty regularly. The difference there is that when TAM came in, the teams that already had those three really good DPs, the TAM came in and they got a supporting cast that really took them to another mm-hmm. level and accentuated the qualities of those three guys. So it's really now about, and to your point, I think you're starting to see teams that maybe haven't spent the money in years for DPs. Now they are, because they know that that helps you get to another level. And I personally think that's the big difference.
You guys have used TAM. You've had a ton of TAM players. Why was now this offseason, people have been screaming for 2-3 years, go sign the big number 9, go spend money Sporting Kansas City. You finally did it. Why was now the time?
Well, I would say that we probably even longer than that. I mean, when you used to probably cover us, we were always trying to find that guy. I think a lot of times what happened was you're almost a victim of your own success, right? If you're competitive, I remember 2 years ago, I had a player that I went to the club and said it was getting right before the summer window. And I said, hey, I found a player that I really like to go get. This is what I'm going to need. I went through the whole process, kind of negotiated all the numbers. And at the end they said, look, we decided not to do it because we're in first place. Why would we do that?
Yeah.
Well, you start to think, well, why would you do it? Is because, of course, you want to do it because you want to get over the hump,
yeah.
right? You want to get
because
to the
2 years from now, as the league progresses, you need that extra player.
Correct. And so for us, I think it's a combination of things. I think last year wasn't the most successful year that we've had, you know, in a long time. But it's not an emotional reaction, because it's something that has been discussed for years. It's more of I think that there's an understanding that the league is changing. We've also invested in a lot of other areas in our club, academy, our second team. And now it's come full circle, and everybody realizes that there's a few areas that we need to make some acquisitions in. Again, our academy, our second team, all of that is going to help us develop players for certain positions on our team. But when we can't develop a player, just like, say, Barcelona, where Barcelona developed a lot of players within their club, but they didn't develop Suarez, they had to go out and acquire him. And it's the same thing with us. We don't have a number 9 that we are developing, so we need to go out and find one of those guys. And that's why Alan was our number 1 choice, and we're fortunate to get him.
Sustained success has been sort of the hallmark of Sporting Kansas City. How difficult was last year for you? Emotionally, how was it difficult?
The part that was difficult was, and I'll submit this forever, and that is, we had a really good team. The injuries just, they were debilitating. Physically, mentally, everything. And it really hurt the team in that regard. But we had a really good team. We had a good roster, everything. But when you sustain as many injuries as we did, you lose the competition within positions. Your training, your standard of training drops. All of those things have a major effect. So that part was very difficult for me, in that I knew what we had. We just couldn't realize it.
Felt like you were beating your head against the door. Another one.
Yes.
How do you personally deal with that year? Outside of the, we can't control injuries. I mean, you yourself.
A lot of evaluation of everything. You know, not just, hey, how do we play, but what are we doing with our equipment, like what our equipment managers, how are we traveling? Like analyzing everything. which is not a bad thing.
No.
Because it helps you evolve. It helps you get better in areas that maybe you thought were really good, but now you realize, hey, something has to change. And then it also invigorates you a little bit, because if you're a competitor, you don't want to go through that again. And so what can you do to protect yourself against that happening again? And so off-season training program changed a little bit. Preseason is going to be a little different. You know, finding new players that are going to bring in an excitement, a desire, a different motivation, which is going to help all the other guys that have been around.
Alan Pulido, I don't want to necessarily go into him. You've talked about him so much locally, nationally. But I do want to talk to you about Liga MX and why it seems to be the market du jour right now. Everybody's going to Liga MX for goal scores. There's been success. That's the obvious reason why. But why is that the market at this particular moment for Major League Soccer?
For us, I can speak for us. We had looked, I mean, when I tell you we looked at so many players, it was crazy in that position all over the world. And what it always kept coming back to with him was is that he's from our region. He understands what it's like to play in CONCACAF. He understands what it's like to play within the kind of climates that we have to play in. So the acclimation of him into our team, into our league, is not going to be as severe as it would be from a player from Europe or South America, because it's different for here. You know, the travel, the number of games. The Mexican players, I always say they're very tough. They're tough mentally as well. And to come into this league as a foreign player, you know, if you come in with this idea that it's going to be easy, you get knocked out pretty quick. Guy like him with his mentality, if you look at even his team this year at Chivas, they were they weren't the best team.
Yeah.
But when you watch his play, he played every game like it was his last. That kind of mentality works in our league, and more importantly, in the way that we like to play. Those are the guys I look for. And so that strong mentality and then the acclimation aspect, very important to us, and that's why it was an easy choice to go there.
I know you're not a guy who will say, oh, I have a ton of regrets, but one of the big storylines of last year was Eikel Parra's departure from Sporting Kansas City and what he was able to do in conjunction with a lot of guys at Minnesota. You got a boatload of TAM. Your record in trades is very, very good within the league. Is there any part of you that wishes that you still had Eikel Parra, that deal was not something that it had to be done, at least in that moment?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely. But it wasn't my choice. Ike, you know, the record's really clear on this. We had done, I think it was two or three contracts in a row, renewed his contract year after year after year. And the unfortunate thing is that contract was done in the media. And you know me for a long time. And I love Ike, and we are, you know, we're very close today. I love the guy. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a great player, all those things. But I think the unfortunate thing is that it went beyond the point of being able to rectify it. He got to a point where this is what he wanted to do. If a guy doesn't want to be with our team, then it's hard for me to say, hey, I'm just gonna block you and not keep you here. I'm just not that kind of coach, and more importantly, I'm not that kind of sporting director. And so when he wanted what he wanted, it made it very difficult, because I'm just opening up the door for every other guy to come knocking on it. And again, if that situation would have been done differently, maybe it could have been managed. But it was done in a very public forum, and unfortunately, it happened the way it did. I also don't think that Ike could have saved our team last year either.
Yeah.
But it doesn't minimize the fact that Ike is a very good player, great guy. And look, I went and got him from
I remember from
San Jose. And
when he needed to have an escape route.
Yeah. And I also stuck with him for 2 years in a row when he
injuries.
Had, you know, season-ending injuries. So I knew the value of him, and again, not just on the field. He's a great guy. So, but I'm happy for him. It's not like when he left us, it was like, oh, I hope he has a terrible year.
Yeah.
I'm happy that it worked out well for him. He's a good guy. He's good for the game, and he's good for a team. So it's no wonder to me. I'm not like blown away that he was, you know, had the success and the impact he did there.
I wish we had more than 10 minutes. We don't. Peter Vermees, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
The time is now, says Peter Vermees, to spend money, and they are doing it. Kind of a big offseason for Sporting Kansas City. Kind of a terrible pun I made there. Did you get it? Gadi Kenda. We haven't talked about him. God. They made that. Oh, yeah, we did. They put it on the scoreboard.
They put it on the scoreboard. What everything? It's official now. Everything I've heard from my sources in Israel, in the homeland, he actually sounds somewhat similar to Felipe Gutierrez. Like high technical quality, likes to push the game forward, athletic. So it'll be interesting to see, do they play together? And you have someone who needs to cover a ton of ground defensively at times,
or Ilya,
yeah, or someone else.
Best option,
yeah, or is he a rotation player in? Or do they change the shape a little bit? So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. What's interesting about them having the biggest offseason is it felt like they had to come from really far away. So I think that's why people aren't locked into saying they are an MLS Cup favorite now, because they've spent all this money, because they fell off so far in 2019. No one knows where's their starting point to figure out where they're at right now.
Fair. We don't know the starting point for Inter Miami. They're brand new. They still have two open designated player spots, as is tradition now in extra time. We try to speak things into reality that we want to happen. And I want Rogelio Funes Mori to sign with Inter Miami. Reunite him with Diego Alonso, please. Get this man there. And now the rumors are starting to heat up. Okay, I'm giving you option. Him, Roger Martinez, or Edison Cavani on massive money. Who are you taking? Probably Edison Cavani,
well, it's
right?
It's not my money.
Yeah, true.
Right?
Okay, it's fine. Take Edison Cavani out of this then. Roger Martinez or Funes Mori, who would you rather have if you're Paul McDonough and Inter Miami? Let's just say the amount of money.
If I was Diego Alonso, I'd rather have Funes Mori, because I've worked with him at Monterrey and he was successful under me, and he's consistent. Like, one thing you know is he will score goals if you create chances for him. That's what he does at Monterrey. That's what he's done his whole career. He's, I think, third all-time leading scorer for Monterrey in probably one of, if not their greatest moments in their club's history. This is a guy who, if you set him up, he scored in the Club World Cup against Liverpool. He will score big goals. He does not create anything, and I don't know that he's a guy that you can build your team around and be the star, you know, off the field, vocally, all those things. Roger Martinez is a huge question mark, but if a game is dead, he can pick the ball up at midfield and create a goal out of nowhere. And I think he'll connect with the Colombian fan base in that area. So those are your two sides. Yeah. I want Roger Martinez because I think he's awesome. He's fun. He's going to be a great part of this league. But Funes Mori is a great player. You just need the other pieces around it. I don't think that that alone says, like, hey, this is a team that's ready to compete, you know, like Atlanta did year one.
Yeah, we'll see. Inter Miami sort of trying to figure it out on these DPs.
Now, Funes Mori and David Silva?
Yeah, no.
That's goals.
Yeah, that's
people sweet. Like goals. Goals
they
are
do
good.
Like goals. How about this? How about Rodolfo Pizarro in the Fire? Kalen, it's still going. I don't know if it's credible. I don't know if it's real. People are talking about Adidas chipping in money. I don't guess they did that with Bossy Schweinsteiger.
Cool.
Monterrey says they want 20 mil. That's a lot of money. That'd be an MLS transfer record, no? Yeah. That'd be more than pity.
I think it's great. I understand some of the criticism towards the Fire and wanting to get – I heard a ton of it around the Chicharito or missing out on that.
They got slammed.
My thing, honestly, I'm looking to judge Chicago by, like, in time and by the totality. What's the word?
Totality. Yeah,
totality.
I don't know. Now I'm just thinking.
The sum of their moves?
Yeah, sum of their moves.
Do that? Yeah. Because I don't think there's a quick fix there. And so it's like, okay, yeah, there's the one thing. It's not just going to – changing the brand isn't going to necessarily just fix it. Or moving downtown isn't necessarily going to just fix it. Or signing one player, although it could help, is not necessarily just going to fix it. So I'm looking to see sort of the breadth of what they're able to do. But, yeah, Pizarro would help.
Yeah, that'd be decent.
It would help.
That would be a good signing.
We've talked about it on the show. I like him as a player. He's not Nico Lodero. No one really probably is. But if you're spending that, if you're setting the MLS record transfer fee, can you get closer than that? Or is Jimenez Berich?
Don't look at me on that one.
Okay. And my him, Serbian. Along with Frankowski and CJ, all of that in total, enough to just be really good, at least next year. And none of them are guys who are approaching their, you know, the ends of their prime. So you have a few years maybe for Wiki to work with this group. It seems like an odd signing if it's a record MLS fee. I think he's a good player. I think he would be effective in this league. I don't know if he's the one that you break that.
You'd
that
be signing him for 4 to 5 years, saying you are basically
you're the team.
Yeah, you're the fulcrum. We'll build everything else around you. I don't think they need to be really good next year. I don't think they will be really good next year. They just need to be better. They need to be at least in the bottom end of the playoffs, I think would be good enough, and play some fun home games, and you're probably good.
But let's go back to what we said about the Crew. These signings, at their age, for their numbers, with the way you're going to sign them, this is what you're locked into. So, yes, the MLS structure could change. But if Chicago makes this signing, Jimenez is 28. Barrich, I think, is 26. Those are your DPs. That number is probably not going to change. Like, that's your team for the next 4 or 5 years. Is being good in 2020 worth setting yourself locked into this level for the next few years?
That's what I have to figure out, right? That's where they pay the big bucks.
Who knows?
Bruce Arena's trying to do the same thing in New England. Brian Schmetzer's done it, won some championships in Seattle. We're going to take a listen to those two interviews. Interviews with Bruce Arena on Man Management and Schmetzer on being a Seattle lifer. When we come back, these guys are going to tear apart my top 10 biggest signings list, as everyone on the internet has done for the last week. 10 minutes with Bruce Arena. Let's talk man management, Bruce. And that is a buzzword, a cliche maybe, but I'm wondering what it means to you. I know you've studied it and you've been a practitioner of it for a long time.
Well, man management is coaching. I think in this modern day where everyone gets excited about analyzing games and drawing arrows and all those other things and think that that's the difference in games. But coaching is managing your players, not only your elite players, but any player you have on your team. And you know, the responsibility as a coach is to understand the strengths and weaknesses of your players, your team, and position everyone accordingly where you put them in the best spots to make plays. And if you do it right, they make more good plays than bad plays, and you have a successful team. And that's all part of man management, where you have dialogues with players, you understand each other, you're on the same wavelength, and you give everyone a chance to succeed. And really, the goal is to position players where they can play at optimal levels.
So soccer is part of it, but the human side is a massive part as well.
And that's in every sport. And if you see any the top coaches in any sport in this country, they kind of tell you that the same. You know, we all know how to put 11 players on the field. It's not that hard. In basketball, they know how to put 5 on the field. So it's really being able to get the most out of each and every player. And that comes with communication, and that's what man management is.
Players are different, so you have to learn how to do that and communicate and get on the same page. I want to take you back through some former players who are very different, big personalities, maybe big egos, different sorts of profiles. Let's start with Marco Echeverri, El Diablo. What was he like to manage? How did you get through to Marco Echeverri? I've heard some interesting stories about his DC days.
A great guy. Like, well, you know, one of the qualities of basically all of these players that you're going to mention and we've heard before is they all want to win. So they want to do whatever's possible to help the team win. Marco was a fabulous talent. He had to, at times, be reminded that he needed to be a better professional and understand what his qualities were. And not that he didn't know that, but we always wanted Marco positioned in the right places on the field to be successful. So at times Marco would come back and try to take a ball off the center back. When we told him that, you know, if we don't have players that can do that, then we got to get rid of them or get rid of you, because we need you playing closer to goal. So convincing Marco of that. And I remember from game one to winning a championship that year that, and I hate to use this as an example, but I actually showed him a chart where his touches were in the game that we won here in Foxborough for the first MLS Cup, where Marco really positioned himself in the attacking half of the field, and that allowed us to be more dangerous in the attack. And we were able to use Marco's qualities. So over a season, you develop a relationship with a player, you communicate, you understand each other, and you put them in the right position to make plays.
Maybe nobody you have a better relationship with long-term? Success, club, country, Landon Donovan.
Landon, a terrific person. Maybe in my view, too many ups and downs when he was a player that could have really been at a high level all the time. But that's all part of it. So there's always those challenges with Landon. But Landon showed up in the big games in the right moments. But Landon, yeah, we spent a lot of time together discussing things both on and off the field. And challenging, but a wonderful person and a great player, and you know, you're willing to do that as a coach. But that's the man management aspect to it as well.
How do you balance the professional side
that you both have and responsibility you both have with the inevitable friendship that comes with that sort of time together.
It just tells your players that we're all people. We're humans, and we can have relationships both on and off the field.
David Beckham, how do you manage that guy? Because the first couple of years with LA, I mean, in large part, you were brought in to get the culture and the ship righted, and getting David to be in the right place was a big part of that.
Well, David wanted to win, and David played in the biggest clubs in the world, and he was used to success, and he didn't like his first couple of years in LA. And knowing that he had a burning desire to win and to be successful was important to David. And David took a big gamble professionally to come to the United States and play. And we had to get it right. And I think we got it right. That's why David Beckham is owner of Miami FC today. So, I go back to saying one of the characteristics of all of these people is they want to win. And it's not always easy that they always want to do it the way you think they should do it. But at the end of the day, you develop a relationship and you reach an agreement on how we're going to work together to be successful.
What would you characterize that agreement with David like? How did you communicate with him? What was your relationship like?
Yeah, I think David probably, obviously coming to the United States is a heck of a lot different than playing at Manchester United, and the relationships and the way we view sports and all of that. And just getting, and David would probably hate to admit to this, get more Americanized. And he couldn't be the player he wanted to be in Europe and the United States. And he had to understand what our culture was about. But at the end of the day, he's such a good person, and in my view, very underrated as a player. I think he was absolutely a world-class player, and he did a lot of great things for our team on the field, and he did a lot of great things for this league off the field.
Robbie Keane helped you guys win some titles. He is player. Fiery. We know that.
Footballer.
What's that mean? What's that mean when you say that?
It's in his blood 24 hours a day. He wants to play. And not a guy you could enjoy more. He's just a great competitor, wanted to play, and wasn't real keen on doing a lot of fitness work. So what I did with him is I camouflaged it a lot, and we just trained another 15-20 minutes.
And that's what AVA is for.
Yeah,
5v5, guys, yeah. Get it wrong.
But Robbie, just a great player, great teammate. Great personality, really another guy that wanted to win. And, you know, I think if you look at the history of this league, I would challenge you to tell me how many players had better careers than Robbie Keane had in Major League Soccer.
I have heard that he did not suffer fools gladly on the training pitch, let's say. People that weren't maybe able to or weren't willing to do the things that he thought they should be doing. Is that characterization
correct? Yeah, and I think David Beckham was the same, you know. And one thing you have to say about that, those guys, when they stepped between the lines, it was all business. So for a coach, that's great to have those kind of personalities around your team, because it raises the level of play. It raises the commitment your team has towards being successful.
Last one for you, and we'll get you out of here. Who have you learned the most from in this sort of arena? Because it's not just soccer. It's management. It's our bosses.
You learn every day. There's not a day. It's exciting to me. You learn something every day. And just in professionally, I keenly observe coaches in every sport in our league. Like last week, for example, I took my staff out to my whole staff basically is a University of Virginia graduates. We saw Virginia play Boston College and lose in a basketball game, Boston College. And the next day we went and saw the Celtics play San Antonio. And watching great coaches in the sport, you know, Tony Bennett from the University of Virginia won a national championship last year, and go see the Celtics the next day and watch a San Antonio team that spanked the Celtics at home, and watch how Popovich builds that team. And he always builds teams where they're at their very best towards the end. So to me, it's always great watching that, watch the relationship the coach has to the players, the style of play he decides to play with, the qualities of the players he has. It's always a fabulous environment to be part of, to be a coach and learn every day about ways that you can be successful. So, you know, yeah. Ask me who's influenced me the most. I don't know the answer to that question. I think every day I'm influenced.
Maybe a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well. But really, we're open. I think coaches that want to be successful are open to things on a daily basis.
All right, Bruce. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
10 minutes with Brian Schmetzer. Coach, it is a joy to have you with us.
Well, thank you.
This is the topic. Being a one-club, one-city man, you have Seattle through and through, the pin on your chest.
Seems like it.
Kind of feels like it should be a tattoo. What's that like? What's it mean to you?
Never thought about the tattoo. But it means...
There's an idea now.
You got me thinking, yeah. So it does mean a lot. I mean, look, if I look back on my career, my life, and, you know, reflect back on, you know, important moments in my life, a lot of them have... been involved, they're surrounded by the Seattle Sounders and soccer. You know, there's different phases of my life, but to be back in your hometown, to coach your hometown team with all the history that Seattle has, to have success in your hometown team, because look, if I wouldn't have won games or MLS Cups, maybe this...
The shine comes off a little bit.
We're not talking like this. So it's surreal at times. And it gives me a great sense of pride when that game was happening at CenturyLink, you know, because we were in the, you know, in the locker room trying to prepare for the match, but my brother was out in the march of the match with Macklemore, and he's singing, and, you know, all our fans are going to the game. He said it was absolutely nuts. So that I take a lot of pride as a guy born and raised in Seattle that day was an event, a massive event for our city, for our club, for the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, for the league. I hope we put on a good showcase for the league.
It still kills me that I wasn't able to be there the first time in a while. You mentioned your family. How does your immediate family experience Sounders fandom? When your dad is the coach...
Yeah.
How, you know, you end a game and you have a press conference and a bunch of reporters grill you and you come home, and do you get grilled a second time by your kids? Or?
Well, growing up, when my dad was coaching me, because unfortunately he did pass last year, he would grill me at the Sunday dinner table. We'd have a game in the morning. He was my coach, and he would ask me about my brothers and sisters could leave, and I had to stay there and get lectured about the game. I always told him, I said, look, it went in one ear and out the other, but I retained half of that information, so thanks. When I come home now, we have grown children. We have 6 kids between us. I have 2 grandbabies, so my family is growing. At home, we like to just dial it down. We like to enjoy a glass of red wine. We like to just, you know, I'll watch a game on TV now and again. But my wife, Christine, she's into tennis. So we're keen on seeing Josie with Sloane Stephens and some of those rumors. So we have a little tranquilo at home.
Yeah, you have an escape.
Yeah, it's good for me because, look, we're in a stressful job. Mm-hmm. I mean, even as good as things have gone, it's still stressful.
How does the stress manifest in your life? Where do you feel stress?
Well, you feel stress on a, you know, on a weekly basis when you show up for a game, you know, whether you're the underdog, whether you're the favorite, whatever. This league is getting harder and harder to win. I mean, look, in 09, when Zig was here and I was the assistant, there was not as much stress. I mean, I felt I was a pretty good assistant to Zig. I could ask him questions. I'd try and, you know, add what I could. I went through the exercise. I mean, Zig was a great mentor to me in the sense that every time he made a decision, I would go, okay, what would I have done? I put myself in his chair and his shoes and said, okay, what decision would I have made? Even all of that training, even all of that experience I had with Zig, it's different when you're making those decisions. And so it's stressful. It's pro sports.
What's the hardest decision you had to make last year, thinking back?
That's actually not a hard question. So Javier... Arriaga comes in, plays against LAFC. We beat the Supporter Shield, best team in the league, best team ever. He's a starting center back. He puts Vela on his butt in the first, you know, sets a tone for the game. And then I bring Ramon Torres in for the final. That was a very difficult. The coaching staff went back and forth. Some of the guys were going, "You're nuts," mm-hmm. you know, because Javier played well.
How was that conversation with Javier? Because he's the future. Well, Roman's gone. Roman's in Miami now.
Yeah. I mean, it was challenging. But look, I have a policy that I'm always honest and I don't overpromise. You know, I don't say things that I can't deliver on. And I think the players understood that and they know that. So when I said it to them, I was very direct and frank, and this is the reason why. And yes, you are the future. And if I need you in the game, you need to be ready. And he took it well because he's a good pro.
You were pretty direct after that series as well. I remember on the field, had a lot of fun with this. Why don't you ask Bobby Warshaw how we did it? What was the inspiration for that? What was going through your mind? What article had you read? Had you listened to a podcast? Because you did, we're going to be jacked about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I do listen to you guys sometimes. I do catch the snippets. And, you know, when Bobby had his whole afraid, you know, are you play afraid, play scared, that whole mantra. The Seattle Sounders don't play scared. I mean, we respect our opponents. We certainly respected LAFC. And Bobby had his points, and, you know, they're his opinions, his points, and, you know, he said it afterwards. Maybe he was correct. I just feel that this franchise, as big a club as we think we are, we always go into games the exact same way. We have the utmost respect for Bob and LAFC or Lucci and FC Dallas at 4-3 game. I always have respect for our opponents, but we don't show any fear. And I think that was kind of in my mind, you know, it was like, I'm going to, you know, let him hear that I didn't like that. But, you know, a lot of our fans piled on him, so I didn't have to do that much.
Man, you know, I always think our jobs are to have an opinion, and we can't be upset if other people have an opinion about us.
No. I like Bobby. I like whatever you guys do. It's America. We're free to speak our minds, and people should.
I kind of feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that I saw a little bit more freedom, maybe just a little bit more personality from you in a public sphere. Not that I doubted that you had it maybe behind closed doors more, but it kind of seemed like to me over the years that you had been a little bit measured, and maybe last year you let some of that go. Did I read that wrong?
I might say you read it wrong. I mean, the big talking points were what I said after the LAFC game. I think other than that, I've been pretty consistent. I think I like to give credit first and foremost to the players. They're the ones that always do the hard work. They're the ones that training every day. They put it in for us. You know, I love my staff. I am the first one always to talk about Gonzo and Jimmy Traore and Precchia, Coach of the Year, and Tommy Dutra, who trains Casey Keller, Steph. I mean, I'm always, I think, pretty consistent in that type of stuff. And look, when things go bad, I always say, okay, when things go bad, then the coaches have to step forward and accept some of that responsibility, because maybe we haven't given the players the tools to be successful. So in that moment, it was an emotional game against LAFC, and certainly afterwards, after the final, you know, it was an emotional day for me. I think I was close to, you know, cracking my voice a little bit just about how that game meant so much to me. But other than that, I think I'm the same.
Where do you keep your rings?
They're piled up with some of the rings I got back with the San Diego Sockers back in the indoor
days.
Come
on, you got a pile of championship rings?
Well, San Diego was pretty good.
That's a pretty good humble brag right there.
San Diego was pretty good to me back in the day. We had very successful indoor teams. I have a couple of those laying around. I have a USL ring or two from the Sounder days, and now a couple more. So it's growing.
Oh, must be nice. Must be nice. Last one here, because back in the day, my first exposure to professional soccer was Wichita Wings.
Okay.
Kansas Coliseum.
All right.
Kansas boy. My grandma had season tickets. I went all the time as a kid. Tell me about the indoor soccer days, your days there. Looking back on those photos of you, young bull. You look like you could run some people over, Brent.
Well, my gift, I'll make this short. My gift in the outdoor game is I could run all all day long. I wasn't that fast and, you know, whatever, but I could run up and down the field. So I found a way to survive in the outdoor game. Then when that folded, I needed to change my dynamic a little bit. And how do I keep a job in indoor? So I moved back. I was a midfielder. I moved back a line. I became a little bit tougher. I threw my weight around a little bit more, tried to stick a few tackles in. You know, indoors, close contact.
Yeah, a lot of hip work.
And I was able to keep a career going because I morphed into a little bit meaner, tougher defender playing indoor soccer.
Did you ever have any wings clashes? Did you play the wings?
Or Rasmussen and those guys? Oh. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. They were good players.
Yeah, the pinball wizard. That's.
There was a lot of, I have a lot of good fond memories of San Diego and indoor soccer. It's a shame that it's kind of still hit and miss. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, it was a great 4 years in San Diego.
Well, someday I'm going to buy a bottle of red and we're going to sit down. I'm going to pick your brain about indoor soccer.
Absolutely. I'll buy the red. And you come join me.
Wow, there it is. Brian, thank you for time, man.
You're welcome.
Okay, mailbag time, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. If you have thoughts on any of these interviews, let us know. We have a lot more coming for you. Good stuff in the future. Dave, I think we just had one, and it was who saying what about my...
Well, we got it all over the place. I'm going to credit Luke from Milwaukee with the actual, because he sent it to the actual mailbag while you guys are all out firing off on Twitter.
Yeah.
Have me go fishing for all of that. And he said, I was fine with Weeby's list of top 10 signings in MLS until he responded to Taylor.
Uh-oh.
On Twitter saying the measurement was profile. He thinks Giovinco was influential in terms of starting a trend in MLS, a low profile on a big team.
He was 10
if you want to scotch which was better in MLS and not success or influence, surely at the time of signing, David Villa had a larger profile than Giovinco. So
yeah, that's true.
The question is, can you find a way to be consistent in your life, Andrew?
No.
And tell
really.
Us what the basis
that,
of this
that's
list
That's the
was.
Problem here is that I basically, this list I said biggest and then everybody had their own definition and I had mine and I basically went like name by name under that definition. Did I screw up and not include David Villa? Yeah, I'm willing to say right now that I should have included David Villa. And
is that your biggest regret?
I don't tweet much. I really don't tweet, but when it starts to turn against you and it's like David Villa, David, and you see all these things, what is that? What does that feel like? Is that stressful?
No, not at all. I felt like I just let the world burn, baby. This content is getting all the engagement.
Okay.
I actually didn't even intend for this to be a thing. Like, I wrote it. It came out on Tuesday. I had written it maybe 4 days before that, forgotten about it, this entire top 10 list, because I thought the whole column was about Chicharito. And then MLS Social, the geniuses that they are, work up a little graphic. And then all of a sudden, I wake up. It was on Friday. I wake up, and my mentions are just burning down in front of me, and my kid went down for a nap, and I just leaned into it. So, yeah.
I just leaned into it.
Yes.
Because what else you were going to do? You were going to be on social media anyway.
Probably.
Now you're
how many lifts a day do I get?
What's your lift
phone
number?
Lifts. I hope it's not as many as I think it probably is.
So you went Beckham one.
Yeah, Beckham was one easy one. I went Chicharito two.
That was your hot take to get people to click on your article.
I thought it wasn't that hot. Like, pretty straightforward. Zlatan, Henri, Kaká, Wayne Rooney, Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Didier Drogba, Carlos Valderrama, and then Giovinco.
And their basis was?
My biggest, like, who made the biggest, who had the combination of profile and newsworthiness at the moment they were signed. So don't include any of their MLS performances, stats, accomplishments, championships in there. If we did, obviously Robbie Keane would be up. Like, if we did, obviously David Villa probably would be an MVP.
I think David Landon Villa Donovan, probably gets in on your first.
He does, and I screwed that up.
Wouldn't that be the case against Giovinco?
Yeah, that's what
that is the case. Yeah, that's why. But I was thinking in his prime,
right.
Juventus, Italian national.
But
team
see,
fringe.
If you're going to do that, now a guy like Carlos Vela has to come in the conversation because if you're talking about moment they came and how it affected
but
the perception of the
club
and
he
league.
Was on loan for another 6 months, which is also how David Villa was, which is why I talked myself out of David Villa because he came and went to Melbourne, didn't he? And then he was like training in a warehouse with RJ Allen.
With Melbourne.
You want to hear a story?
Yes, except.
Yeah, go
hold on. And I can't confirm this. This is just a rumor. But I heard a rumor that when Zlatan came to MLS and people asked him who one of the best players was, and they said it was Giovinco, he was like, oh, he used to clean my boots.
Keeping the legend alive.
Okay, so that's a good story.
But
can't be in the top 10.
Yeah, I would say Vela. LAFC, which is one of the most successful clubs, like not on the field. Look at how many fans were in the stadium for a preseason game yesterday. Was built around Vela. Remember that first rally downtown?
Yeah, I do.
We couldn't believe it was happening.
But at the moment he was signed.
Yeah, you're judging on his performance.
Yes, you're pushing it out farther.
I'm saying take away the performance. He was a game-changing signing because it proved that the
team
was.
So where would you put him in this list?
I don't really. I would put him over Rooney and Kaká. Facts. Potential. Straight up facts.
Ballon d'Or winner. Champions League winner.
8 years ago.
World Cup winner. It doesn't matter. That's his profile. When he signed, they were packing 65K into whatever the bowl was, the Citrus Bowl. Two times at least.
Yeah.
He was huge. It
He's
was going to
give me attendance records over here. Miami United.
He was the highest paid player in the league at the time. It was big.
But everyone knew he was on his last legs, and it was a different type of signing.
And that was a lot of people's critique of this list. They were like, oh, this is like the all-retirement 10. And
yes.
I was like, nah, that's not what it's supposed to be. We could do the all six, we could do the all-influential, and here comes Miguel Amirón. Fine. Now, some other regrets. Landon Donovan.
Yeah, I told you this when you made the list. It's hard because what is a it's hard because of when he signed and the
way
he signed.
His profile for the Americans
was huge.
Because
he came to San Jose also.
Clint Dempsey, there was a lot of hype for that one, remember?
Yeah,
pretty big number. You mentioned one in the rundown meeting.
Yeah.
I want you to just put it out there.
Freddie Adu.
Yeah, and I feel like that one was probably a miss too.
Freddie Adu, honestly, I mean, at that point in time, I think I saw something as far as like away attendance by like the biggest away attendance ever, and he's still in like the top five or top three of that of everywhere he went. People wanted to go see.
You have
Freddie
to ask yourself,
it
also how many people were going? Like, what's the
It also helped that everyone was in an NFL stadium back then, so there were a lot of seats.
Yeah, but he is a part of our history, and I don't think we should forget him and what he was able to do as far as lifting up the league in a way that it really couldn't break through it in any other way at that time.
I think our unbiased producer, Anders, wants us to put in Alvaro Fernandez here. So Flacco gets
a
mention.
Flacco, big signing on that one.
And Blazing Kufo.
Yeah, Blazing Kufo, sure. I was thinking about that. Freddie Ljungberg, back in the day. What's some other?
Christian Tiffert.
Yeah, Christian Tiffert.
He said it about seven times in my ear.
You know, these Swedes have a long memory.
Yeah.
As far as best value, Chris Wondolowski's got to be up there.
Hey, that's a different list.
But not from outside
the
league.
It's a different list.
Yeah.
See, to me, Giovinco goes like number one on that list.
And best
of
value.
Like value, difference, perception. I thought his signing was such a game-changing moment.
It's like three other lists. You're like putting, it's like influential. How about that? He influenced the league in a certain way because he was an MVP.
Signing.
He was.
He won a
that's influential.
I would have loved to see, I know it's not possible, but if you could take, this is like a perfect for extra time, is this some fake universe, right?
Yeah.
But if you could take Cuauhtemoc Blanco when he signed then and put him into MLS now.
Ooh.
Like social media.
With the media around him, the celebrity, like the way that the leagues are collaborating.
Can I ask this question? If he was in the league now, how much stuff would be out there on social media off the field? That would be...
Well, yeah, he was lucky that there wasn't as much social media, period, at that point.
Well, he's the mayor of a city now in the social media age, so...
I think he's a governor.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a governor now.
I think so. I think it's a dangerous situation.
What a climber. What a climber. Got a lot of love for Qua.
I've been wanting to do that movement episode for... The longest.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
Flood the flood Adam Aless with all the requests for that one.
Do you think he'd know who you were?
I'm
not trying.
I'd have to maybe put on the headband.
Wear the
helmet
a little bit.
Yeah.
Grow the hair out a little bit. All right. Big thank you to Julian Gressel for joining us and Peter Vermees, Brian Schmetzer, and Bruce Arena for taking the time to sit down out in Los Angeles. That's it for us. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Enjoy your week. We'll be right back.